Welcome to Wellness Renaissance and Gluten-Free and Other Special Diets podcast, supporting you on your unique journey to finding your best health. Hey everyone, before we dive into the main recorded part of this episode, I just want to mention a couple things. First of all, if you are new to the podcast, or this is the first episode that you're listening to, I just want to let you know that this is a different format. Most of the episodes are conversations with other people or interviews with practitioners or someone of interest, that kind of thing. This one I did a little differently. I went off on my own to share some thoughts on a topic that's very personal to me. So if you don't find this style and one person talking to themselves your cup of tea, definitely check out the other episodes and see if there are topics that interest you or maybe you don't know a whole lot about. We always mention the Facebook page, but this is one of those episodes that I would love to have some interaction and feedback around. So feel free to connect on Facebook at facebook.com/wellnessren. Another thing that I had realized after I had recorded this is that I didn't actually call out the doctor's name that I really did want to mention. I think I got my HIPAA mode on a little bit and therefore failed to do that. So going forward in the conversation, I'm talking about a health situation that I had, and the doctor that prescribed the integrative therapy that I used, which was basically proper and specific supplementation and a shift to my diet, this was the thing that actually shifted my health. And the person who got me on that path was Dr. Jocelyn Strand. And if you are familiar with her, great. If you are not, but would like to be, check out podcast number 2. I did an interview with her a while back, and you have an opportunity to get to know her, learn more about her philosophy, her practice, what a naturopath actually is, and all that good stuff. You can find that episode by going to the podcast page, wellnessrenpodcast.com, scroll down, click the previous episodes button until you get to number 2, and you can play it right there. And if you are subscribed through iTunes, you should be able to find it either in your downloaded episodes or in the feed, but it should be there accessible to you. Lastly, is that if you are hearing helicopter noises during the podcast and it's something that is annoying, I apologize, but do hang in there because it does go away. In the space that I sometimes record, helicopters are going by and they can be very noisy, but it's something that I have sometimes tuned out, so I apologize for that. With those things covered, we'll head right in. Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening. Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance podcast. I'm going to do something a little different today. I'm going to share a story that happened to me this last summer that I have kind of felt, I guess, called is the best description for that, like, knot in your stomach that keeps saying, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. but I want to share this story of kind of a medical event that I happened and just all of the things that were around it that made it a little challenging. A, to raise the question and conversation about how do we make changes. And some of the changes that I think really could be benefited to absolutely everybody, including the people, the workers, the people receiving treatment, just would be really easy to make. Really easy. Like, simple as just telling people accurate information. Really easy for everybody. Everybody wins here. And you'll understand why that's important in a little bit. But I also, just in case this reaches somebody who needs the information, who has a greater understanding of how to maybe change systems, or somebody who works and just can think about things maybe in a little bit different way, from a different perspective. Anything, any way that this reaches somebody and benefits them. But I think this story also speaks to some of the attitudes that people come out of medical issues and why there is sort of a negative attitude towards the medical field that I don't think necessarily has to be there, but it is there for a good reason, if you understand the difference. So here's my story. I'm gonna basically give the information, so I'm revealing probably more about myself in some ways than I want to, but that's okay, because if it has use and it has benefits, and it's what happened, and I want to be genuine and real, because this was very, very frustrating, and it didn't have to be. So basically, the story begins last summer, where I received an abnormal pap test. So the nurse calls to tell me that I had the abnormal pap test. And of course, anytime you receive a call where there's weird things going on medically, it's like, you know, A, that's probably so far from your brain and definitely was mine the day that I got the phone call. So it was definitely a mind shift into, okay, wait a minute, what's going on here? So the nurse basically told me what happened. And I'm like, okay, what are next steps? What does this mean? And she says, okay, well, you need to schedule colposcopy. And she basically said, a colposcopy is pretty much just like a pap. And that was pretty much what she told me. And I said, okay, I asked a lot of questions because I don't deal well with medical procedures. I am the person who needs to lay down. And anytime you can put me out for something, we both want that. Trust me. It's way better than not in most cases. So I basically was very clear in saying, look, I don't deal well with this. I need to know if I need to bring somebody. I need to know how to handle food, drink, whatever. And I know probably somebody who's had this might be like, oh, brother. But I've had a uterus biopsy done, for instance, and I was told, oh, it's going to be completely not painful and whatever. And it was very uncomfortable. And it wasn't uncomfortable. It was really painful. And I turned sheet white and happily I was laying there and had somebody with me and whatever. But it wasn't the lack of pain that they were like, oh, it's no big deal. I talked to somebody else who had a uterus biopsy and she really thought for her it really was no big deal. So anyway, so we're all different is, I guess, the point of that point right there. So I know myself well enough to ask questions, and that is exactly what I did, how much pain is going to be involved. And she just kept saying, it's just like a pap smear. They're just going to brush some cells off. And she, I don't think, used any more strong language than that. So I was thinking, okay, this isn't going to be a big deal. And maybe why didn't we do this the first time? But that was what I was told. So when this happened, the other thing that I also did was I made an appointment I talked to my naturopath. So I've got my allopathic doctor who is giving me, or the nurse is giving me this information. My naturopathic doctor is who I'm like, okay, what do we do right now? So I ended up talking to her and she basically did various tests, some blood tests that, again, were not suggested by my regular clinic. And who knows, had I talked to my doctor, if this would have been something she would have suggested. But I don't know. And talking to other people, nobody has ever said this has been suggested for them. What we ended up finding out from the additional blood tests and work that my naturopath did was that I had a very low folate conversion, which can lead to, basically, can support the abnormal cells that were going on. So I worked with my naturopath. Again, this is what we found out. Well, back to the colposcopy. So I need to have the colposcopy because we need to know what kind of cells we're dealing with and that kind of thing. I started talking to people about the colposcopy, a few medical professionals, A, my naturopath, B, a healthcare worker at the Women's Health Clinic. Thank you, Women's Health Clinic in Duluth. And Planned Parenthood. Thank you, Planned Parenthood. And a few other random people who said, no, 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 no. Like I told them exactly what the nurse said. Then no, that they basically said, one person said to me, she either has never had it and hasn't been described the procedure well, and therefore shouldn't be handing off information about it, or she's trying to make it sound nice for you so you go into it less freaked out. And neither of those answers are good answers. And I totally agree with that. So that was freaking me out because now I'm like, it's that distrust. It's like, okay, I've gotten some incorrect information that everybody else seems to agree is not the right answer. And I actually did call the clinic back and I know I called and re-asked some questions to her and she ended up, I didn't get a different nurse, ended up getting kind of the same information. Almost rescheduled my procedure at Planned Parenthood because when I called them, they gave me what I felt was more accurate information. And the challenging part is Planned Parenthood wouldn't have been covered, I think, by my insurance, or it was questionable. My current clinic is. I like my current clinic. I love my doctor. But these situations set me off when I've specifically done my due diligence to ask those questions. So I'm now freaked out because now I don't know, like, how bad is this really going to be? And ended up going through it with my clinic, And it was not pleasant at all. It was very uncomfortable. And I said to another nurse, this is what I had been told. And she kind of laughed and said, in recognition with my, not that it was sad that she laughed, she recognized my pain here. And in recognition of that, said, oh, I think I know probably who told you that. She's never had one done. My point to that is then she shouldn't be giving out information, or she should be giving out accurate information. So this was concerning because I wanted to let people know I've been giving really wrong information and that's not okay. So anyway, I did go in. I had my test. It was very not pleasant. It wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it was very, very uncomfortable. And biopsy was not a word, I believe, that came up in the description by the nurses that talked to me. Well, I understand biopsy. And if it did come up again, it was very lightly discussed that it was just brushing the uterus. That was really the picture that I kept getting over and over again. Or not the uterus, but the cervix. And so I went in. It was kind of funny, actually. When I went to the clinic, I was, of course, uncomfortable. And I did go alone and trying to woman up, basically. And there was a guy, so this is a very side note, but it's a little funny piece of the story that I think a few people will appreciate. There was a guy who was checking people in at the particular clinic that I went to, who sounds like Joss Whedon. If any of you know who Joss Whedon is, he's a movie producer, writer guy. He did Buffy the Vampire Slayer and various other wonderful shows. But this guy had the cadence and the speech pattern and the sound of Joss Whedon, and all I could think about while I was sitting in the room is, can he please come in there with me and hold my hand and talk? I don't need to look at him. He just needs to say nice things and sound Joss Whedon-esque, and that will help me through. I did not ask for this, by the way, but probably should have. So anyway, the doctor who did it for me was great, and I was also explained to her the challenges that I had, and she was like, oh, no, here's what's going to happen. So she wasn't trying to sugarcoat anything, and it was again, not a comfortable procedure. Wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it was, you know, be prepared. If you're going to have this thing, be prepared. And I just think that's really important. I am, like, on one hand, I don't want to hear what's going to happen because it's icky. On the other hand, I absolutely need to know what's going to happen so I can take care of what I need to do and ask for the things that I need. And thankfully, when we got in there, all was well. So the actual procedure and experience in the actual clinic, great. Best as it could have been. And what I did learn, and I realize this isn't exactly part of the story, but it's part of the story that makes things interesting and interesting for me. I don't respond to pain pills. So this is another reason that I need to know what I'm dealing with. I have yet to find a medical, like, pain type thing that actually works for me. And I've certainly talked to more people out there who have that similar experience. So, but what I did learn that night was how really good quality gin really does actually work as a really good painkiller. Like, I went out with a friend of mine because I didn't want to go sit home and stare at the television and like zone out for hours. We went out and I wanted to try in Duluth, if you're in Duluth, Minnesota, the Vickery Distillery. A lovely place, and they have good quality alcohol. And so I went there and had one drink, and my friend who I was with said, my gosh, you're walking out of here a lot easier, a lot more comfortably than you're walking in. So go good quality alcohol as a treatment plan, I guess. I suppose I shouldn't be saying that as a health educator, but you know what? It's real and it's true and whatever. I didn't go, like, overdo it. I had one drink, okay? Fast forward to the next contact with my doctor, which is basically, hey, your abnormal cells are a high-risk abnormal cells, and so we need to do the next step. So, of course, my logical question is, what's the next step? Well, the next step is it's called the LEAP procedure, and it's been a while since the details have been described to me, so this is what I recall. Basically, they go in and burn off a layer or so of your cervix to pull off the questionable and high-risk cells, right? So they go in, they pull it off, and this is what's done to you. So I talked to then the next clinic that was going to take that procedure on, again, asking a ton of questions and being, again, very clear, I don't deal with these things well, and I want to know what exactly we're doing and what this is going to be like. Well, so There were a lot of interesting things that happened here. I think she actually did a pretty good job of explaining what the procedure would be and kind of giving me, here's what people tend to experience. Some people it's more painful and long lasting than others. What I found was really interesting in all of this, the thing that really sticks out to me in the description, was the afterthought of, and I somewhere have it written down, but I don't remember how many weeks it was that you can't be sexually active. But it was just an after kind of discussion, like it almost like wouldn't have come up. This really, and well, first, like when she said how many weeks it was, I was like, you're kidding me. Probably out of the reaction of the time. And then having that realization of, okay, this is kind of serious, right? Like, this is, again, not another pap smear, not that she explained it that way, but this is serious. You have some serious healing to do. And I was potentially going to be running at the time. And that I had to ask as a whole different question of, can I run the race that I wanted to run? And ended up deciding that no, that was probably not a good idea if I actually did the lead procedure. So, but again, that took me a couple phone calls to figure out, because it hadn't really been described that it was that serious. But I think somebody called it to my attention and said, you need to ask about this. Well, so back to the whole sexual activity thing. Why that kind of annoyed me is, A, I think that's an important thing to just let people know about. I have a personal annoyance to the fact that I wonder if it was a guy in a situation, from what I've heard from guys, you know, again, it's always a different person giving a different thing, but it seems like guys get things like this told more quickly. How long you can't have sex. Like, it's an important thing for a guy to know. For a woman, you're just a woman. You probably don't really have sex anyway. So we'll just kind of tell you after the procedure. And I think that was one thing that did happen after I had the colposcopy, was that it was kind of, again, an afterthought of how long to not be sexually active. So, and they never give you details. They just don't say not being sexually active. They don't say what kind of sexual activity is okay. They don't give you any options. Like, you really got to push for those. And I really think that's a mistake. Really, really do. I think it's a huge mistake to sort of make it less important, or kind of just, again, it's that afterthought. And I think that that's, this is an important thing. Sexuality is an important thing in everybody's life. And whether you're active or not, you need that information and you need details, and people need to be comfortable talking about that so people don't make mistakes and hurt themselves. So I just, the afterthought of that was very, very frustrating to me, because I'm, again, just tired of the attitude that, well, you know, men are sexual beings and women, that's not something we have to talk about. No, it is absolutely something that needs to be talked about, and it needs to be talked about as if it is part of your treatment plan. It is part of the deal. If you are not supposed to do something, you need to know what you can do, what you can't do, and for how long, and what's going on, and how to figure it out, and what to expect, and all of that stuff. Just as I thought, you know, it may have been a good idea to ask more questions about, do you have any plans where you're going to be very physically active around this time that we're talking about doing this procedure? But the whole running thing, because I don't know, right? So I'm not saying overinflate the importance or what you can and cannot do, but to make people aware, hey, if you're planning on moving in the next couple weeks, you might either want to get help or reconsider, or, you know, here's what you should or shouldn't do. Yes, it's kind of my responsibility to ask some of that, but when you're told sometimes that things are not a big deal, you assume they're not a big deal. So anyway, I go through this. This does not sound like a procedure I'm excited to do in any form, and want to do the right thing for myself, but really have concerns. Go back to my naturopath. My naturopath has devised a treatment plan with the explanation of the cells that we're dealing with and the research that she has done. Thank you very much, naturopath, for doing that. And basically, you know, she said, look, here's what I would do with you. And we had a combination of supplements and diet. And she said, this is what I would do, and this is how long I would do the plan. So, and she said, you can do whatever you want. You could do the both. You could do one or the other. And so basically what I decided was that I wanted to do the supplements and the diet, because I wanted to know if these things were working. I needed to know that. From what I understood about the cells is that they probably were not going to overrun my body in this time, but of course you're always kind of taking a chance, I suppose. So I went back to the clinic where I was going to have the leap procedure, and I talked to the person there and explained to her what I wanted to do. She very much advised against it, probably out of the own protection of her job and whatever. And she said, no, we really can't. And so I understand this. I just think it's interesting. You know, we really can't advise that you do that. You know, you have high risk cells, and obviously we don't want it to turn worse, and people don't really heal. This isn't something that people, that goes away and that heal, people heal themselves. Okay. I guess that's her experience. I don't know what's her experience and what is what she's telling me, because it's what she has to. I'm sorry, but that's the reality. I've heard way too many medical professionals say, I have my beliefs and my experiences, but that's not what I can share with my patients. So I'm already kind of in the, I have to make my own decision, which again, I know it's all personal responsibility, but if we had more full and accurate information for us, maybe that would be helpful. That will again come into play later on in this story. Okay, I decide this is what I'm going to do. I say to the nurse, this is what I want to do. I want to go on this, I think it was 8 or 12 week treatment plan with my other doctor. And then when I am done, I will do whatever test you guys say that I need to have to determine where we're at. I couldn't even get them to answer which test that was. I made the assumption that it was a pap smear test because it seemed the most logical, but I kind of asked, what do I need done? What do I need done? Like, do I need the biopsy thing done again? Or is that the best course of action? Or is it just simply testing for abnormal cells? So basically, because I didn't get a great answer, and after I was advised not to do this, and they kind of agree, you know, there was like, okay, you know, go tell your doctor and she'll tell you what to do. So I went back to my regular doctor, didn't see or talk to my doctor. I did, however, call and talk to the nurse and say, hey, this is what I'm planning on doing. Let me know what I need to do from your end. And they basically said, you should call the clinic that you just talked to. And I said, I did that. And so I get the bounce around that each other was the person I was supposed to talk to. So finally, what I did is I just made a pap smear appointment at the end of my supplement and food treatment plan and said, okay, this is the plan I'm going to take. If I'm wrong, hopefully somebody will tell me. I also, at that time, when I talked to the nurse at my clinic, and I said, look, my doctor has sent a bunch of studies over to back up what she is doing. Can I send them to my doctor? And in the next phone call, the nurse that I was talking said, no, your doctor doesn't, she doesn't need them. And so, okay. And that bummed me out, because the impression that I have of my current doctor is that she's very open to those kinds of things and that this would be something that would interest her. And so I was feeling a little bad about that towards my doctor at the time, because I was sad that she didn't have interest in what my treatment plan was that I was doing outside of her and how I was dealing with this. And I'm like, well, does this like even matter? Like, is it simply the case that you're not following the clinical directions? So whatever, go do what you're going to do. So anyway, I scheduled that next pap smear at the end of my treatment plan, went through all of the treatments recommended by my doctor, the supplements and the food. And the food, just so we were clear here, was basically high veg, high cruciferous, and low to no sugar. Basically, I did no sugar except for some fruits. So that was completely fine. Went through that, went to my doctor, had the additional pap smear, and had literally only time to do the pap smear. So my doctor, when she came into the room, she's like, okay, what are we doing here? We're doing a pap smear. Why are we doing this pap smear? And I explained to her exactly why we were doing the pap smear. And I had said that I'd gone to my naturopath, and she gave me this directive. And so I said, I called and I gave the nurse that information, and I asked her if you wanted to see the studies, and the nurse said no. And she goes, nobody asked me if I wanted to see the studies, which made me just feel both worse and better. Sad that my nurse hadn't actually asked the doctor, and she is my go-between between my doctor. So I'm depending on them to do the things that I ask or tell me they're not going to do it. You know, she's like, and no, I don't care. I don't care. So I'm not going to give him. Yeah, I don't have time for that. Okay, fine. Then I know my doctor's never going to be asked. And okay, better, because my doctor was genuinely interested. So we figured out why I was there, did the tests and test. So here's the next part of the story. So I get the results for the test, right? And I'm like waiting on pins and needles. This is a big deal for me. Okay. I have altered my diet. I've done all of the things that my doctor had suggested that I do to try to get rid of abnormal cells to keep myself from getting cancer. Okay. That's just so we're clear, because I don't think I explained that. Abnormal cells turn into cervical cancer if you don't do anything with them. So this is a big deal to me. I have worked really hard all summer to take care of myself, to do the plan, to do the supplements. I want to know if this worked. This is where the rubber meets the road, et cetera, et cetera. So I finally get the call from a nurse. And so she's reading me the results of all of the tests that they had done. And so she says, your pap smear was negative. And I said, okay, wait a minute. So what you're telling me is that I have no abnormal cells on my pap smear. She says, you know, no, your pap smear is negative. It's fine. And I'm like, okay, like I explained to her, I said, I'm asking you this only because, and I kind of went through what I had gone through a little bit to let her know. And to be very clear, this is kind of like a big deal to me. Like, I really want to make sure I'm hearing you correctly. And so she was like, yep, no, it's clear. You're fine. And she didn't really react, and she didn't know the history. So it was news to her. She's like, oh, so you had an abnormal pap. Oh, kind of interesting. And she just like, yeah, you're fine. And I'm like, okay, so like, how normal is this that you call somebody and you see they had an abnormal pap and then their pap is normal again? Because according to one of the nurses I talked to, that doesn't ever happen without a leap procedure in the middle or something. And so I think for me, I was very excited, and it was in a place and a time when I couldn't be too excited. And I needed somebody else to be excited. I needed somebody else to get this. I needed somebody in the medical profession, like this nurse on the phone, to really get what I had just accomplished. I needed something solid letting me know that this was real right now. And when I had started going to the clinic, my previous doctor there had basically, what seemed like to me anyway, had a nurse. Because whenever I dealt with anybody or got answers or got phone calls or called in, I talked to one person. So she kind of knew my medical history, right? And I had a feeling that had I had that situation, she would have gotten a little more on a visceral level what had just happened and how cool it was. And I, like I said, really needed that right then and there, like this marking in time of woohoo, we did it. So the other thing that leads me to thinking in this situation, because of the sort of lackluster response, this is why, perhaps, this is my takeaway from this. This is why the nurse at the other clinic who was going to do my leap procedure or set me up for the leap procedure, when she says nobody ever heals from that, nobody ever does that, again, maybe she's just speaking from rote so they can get me in for a leap procedure. Or is this what happens? We people who do this, who succeed at doing this outside of the allopathic, the Western medicine, the typical clinic, we do these things and then nobody cares. They're never documented. So at least that's what it feels like to me. And maybe I'm not understanding it. I'm open to not understanding it. I am speaking from my experience, as well as other people who have shared theirs too. So it is that you walk away with that. Nobody gets this. Nobody gets this happens because nobody listens. Nobody cares. Nobody's following up with one person. Nobody's following through except my doctor eventually to understand this is what's happening. Did it take work on my part? Yes, it did. But I did the work and I had the success. And I know that some doctors will say, well, I don't have time to make sure that my patients do all that. So we really can't depend on it. That super makes me sad that we live in, again, a world like that. To me, that's what doctors are there for. And our system isn't helping them be there for that. And that stinks. So what I walk away with from this, as many other people have, but if you don't agree with me, you have to understand where I'm coming from. This really tells me that I have to do what I'm going to do in some ways, despite what the medical, the allopathic or my doctor or the typical Western medicine suggests me to do. And again, I never got to talk to my actual doctor about this. So who knows where she would have come down if we would have had the full conversation. But the reality is, it's hard to always take a half a day to go talk to my doctor about a conversation, which, again, when I heard she didn't care about seeing what I was doing, my other doctor's treatment plan, her supportive studies, etc., it was kind of like, well, it doesn't matter then. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. So how many people walk away with that feeling of, well, I have to do what I'm going to do? Like, we all know that we need to be agents of our own care, but we trust our doctors. We want our doctors to know and be with us and support us through whatever treatment plan we do instead of, and again, this isn't reflective of my specific doctor, my allopathic doctor, foisting their only opinion and their only treatment on me. She didn't even have the opportunity to do that. That was the nurses and the other clinics that were doing that. So, but the point here is, when doctors get frustrated because we go off and do our own thing, this is exactly why we go off and do our own thing. Because we don't have time, like you don't have time, like the doctors don't have time, to fight through the noise to get to talk to our doctor, to make another appointment, to go in and then not feel supported or have them just talk us out of it. When it's something that we feel in our being is the right thing to do, that it is the self-care we need to take. And I'm sure that many would argue, well, supplements aren't always the answer and blah, 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 in many cases where things don't work. But I know many cases of allopathic medicine that didn't work. I have a lot of them in my own little library. Many medications that I've tried that the doctor said, this is what it's going to do. And it did not do that at all. So my body doesn't work that way. And for those of us who don't, whose bodies don't quite work in the way that the traditional allopathic 7-minute model works for, we do end up doing our own thing. So this is kind of also a call to practitioners, to doctors, to whoever, to understand, and maybe they do understand in the privacy of their own home when they're not in their office having to work within the model that they themselves struggle with. And thank God for the clinics that allow their people to do the work in the way that they need to do them, to spend the time with the patients that they tend to spend, which is why I went with this clinic in the first place, is that they gave a little more time and my doctor actually took care of me. And so I'm willing to make the trek down to a clinic that's a little bit farther away than what's like literally a couple blocks from my house to go to people that I trust. And this whole experience broke some of that trust, right? I had nurses not telling me right information. I had people not really caring about my care. They were only caring about getting me off the phone, or I don't know what they were. They were trying to make it easy for themselves. They were trying to be good gatekeepers and do their job. I don't really know what all was going on there. But the reality is, I got wrong information in a lot of different places that I had to experience through. Had I just listened to that first person who all I was going in to get a pap smear, my experience on that table would not have been pleasant for me or that doctor, because I would have freaked out thinking something was really wrong and that they were potentially doing something to me that wasn't okay. And maybe the doctor would have explained it well as she walked in, but I wouldn't have been prepared for that. And that would have been really, really just a challenge for me that I maybe would have wrapped my brain around in the time of and dealt with it. But having talked to so many other people, I at least was prepared for what I was dealing with. And so again, it broke a lot of trust with me and my clinic, not so much with me and my doctor. And I do have to say, when I actually went back to my doctor and saw her for the first time after all my tests were cleared and everything, her acknowledgement was, that's really cool. I mean, she got it. And I really appreciate that from her, because again, I needed that validation from her, because to me, it was validation that I did the right thing. It was validation that she actually cares about the overarching treatment of me, rather than, well, I didn't prescribe that treatment plan, so I don't really care that it worked for you. She got that. And she also did get the articles, because when I did talk to her and she said she did want them, I did get them sent to her and she did receive them. So I am pleased that the nurses did do that. Not pleased that they gave me incorrect information. again, calling to the action of listening to what I'm saying and listening to the places. If you are a nurse or a caregiver or a care provider in some fashion, your little comments have big effects. And I was considering, do I find a different doctor? Like, where else should I be going? Thankfully, I rebrought this stuff up with my doctor and everything is fine and I feel good about it. But I know that she's the one who I can trust. I'm not so sure about the other folks. Not saying they aren't trustable and not saying there aren't good people there and not saying the people that gave me incorrect information aren't good people. But I am saying, my God, know what you're talking about when you know about it. There's nothing worse. When somebody tells you something's supposed to be pain-free and you experience pain, it isn't having me walk into a procedure expecting the best and getting the best. And I know that that's sort of a mindset that can, I think, work on certain times. But when I then perceive this pain or feel this pain, I'm now in the place of you're doing something wrong or something is wrong or whatever the case is when it's supposed to be a pain-free procedure. So I'm just saying, think about what you say. I don't know how to deal with when you'd be honest with people and when you try to paint the best picture. I totally get that on a psychological level, telling people the breadth of experience can cause the lesser good experience. But I also know that the opposite can be true kind of as well too. So I'm sharing this because I hope that it's helpful. I'd love having some effect. I'd love the whole medical system to change for everybody involved, honestly. And that would be delightful. Some of the pieces that can change are, again, simply giving accurate answers. All along the way, accurate answers. If some of those were answers that could have been solved by the first person saying, you know what, I have never had this procedure, but one of our other people or ex other nurse has. Let me have you talk to her. Or saying, can I talk to, you know, maybe she doesn't have to disclose that the nurse has had this procedure, but she can say, let me have somebody talk to you who's more familiar with the procedure, right? Not telling me that the doctor doesn't want the information when they haven't even asked the doctor. So not cool. You nurse who did that, again, if you're listening to this, you put a block between me and my doctor and our communication. That's an effect that your words had. You can walk away from it. It doesn't matter. 5 minutes after the call, you're probably not thinking about it again. It's just you getting through your day and you being the good gatekeeper that you're supposed to be. That, in my mind, is not a good gatekeeper. And I don't want anybody really called out for this. It's part of the reason that I probably didn't get a hold of the clinic. I was very, very much kind of wanted to do that. I kind of wanted to say, in a very real way, here's what happened. But I really would prefer that the people who did this or, you know, who gave the answers they gave, that they listen and remember. And I'm betting that most of them won't, but I do. So that's an important thing to think about too. Again, you walk away, no harm, no foul on your end, but there is on mine. So, or the patients. I mean, this isn't just about me. This is about patients, right? I would love them to be able to think about it and process it in the privacy of their own head and to maybe just to be able to tweak the way that things are handled a little differently next time. And we all are learning beings and trying to process our life and our world and how we navigate in it. So it is about just being able to tweak and adjust and do things a little differently, but know that the things that you say and the things that you do, even though they seem really small to you, have big effects. Nurses and doctors and practitioners, I mean, we all, those of us who all work with people, we all make mistakes and we don't always say the right thing at the right time and all of that. The goal is to try, how can we keep learning and keep doing things better the next time and learn. It maybe is a huge mind-blowing aha moment for somebody to realize, holy cow, the words that I say really do have an effect. I really do play an important part in people's lives. You're not just there for us to check our blood pressure, walk away, and whatever. In many cases, that's exactly kind of what happens, but not always. And some of the things that you have an effect, I mean, my gosh, I was just talking to somebody yesterday. We were discussing the people who take blood and give shots. And the ones that do it well, for those of us who that pain is really icky, nasty, horrible to us, we want to hug them and give them a raise. And I'm telling you, if I was a Bill Gates person there would be some people I would be happy to hand $10,000 checks to who took my blood well and who gave me a shot well. It would absolutely make my day to be able to go, you rock. I don't know what training you had, but please pass it on. Here's $10,000. Make your life easy because you just made my day the best day ever. Absolutely, man. When I'm a millionaire, this is the stuff I want to do because I want people to know those little things are so huge. They're so huge. I remember people who gave me good shots. I remember the bad ones too, trust me, but I remember and I can talk to you about them. So clearly they made an emotional impression, right? We all living under the human condition, we don't say the right things all the time in the right tone or whatever. And you never know when you're going to say something positive or negative that's going to have a real solid effect on somebody. But again, some of these situations that I'm talking about, it just accurate information would have solved the problem. And, you know, I appreciate the wanting to put the psychological best spin on things, but that does not work for everybody. And know what you might be causing as a problem in that. You know, not that you always have to put the worst case outlying scenario. Unless the worst case scenario is truly the most common scenario, then that's probably something that you should give and let people have realistic access to what they might expect so that they can take care of themselves. Maybe it's the timing of when something is done. Maybe it's, I don't know, a lot of other factors can go into that. So I guess I leave with that. How can we have people being more honest and accurate and be okay to say, I don't know, and I'm not the best person to answer this question, and pass it off to somebody else and have that be okay? Things like that. Again, honesty would have solved a lot of issues here. The other thing I'm just going to re-point out, because it just sticks in my craw, is the expectations of sexuality and what, you know, in this procedure where I wasn't supposed to have sexual activity for multiple weeks. Very important thing to say. And I actually had multiple conversations with multiple nurses about the procedure, and they all gave me little bits of different information. They were all pretty close, but it was cool to hear that they were kind of talking from their experience a little bit. And one was a little more upfront about the sexual, like you cannot be sexually active for this amount of time. So if you have an anniversary or a special event coming up, you should probably plan around this. And I was like, yay. Like, not only about special anniversary or special event, but at least calling that out and saying, hey, this is a thing and this is an important thing. Just not disrespecting women and their sexuality and not being afraid to talk about it. I know that's something I read more and more about, that doctors and nurses are not talking about sexual issues that come up with things because they're uncomfortable. And you know what? If you're in the medical profession, I'm sorry, it's just a part, it's a huge part of life. How were you born, right? So we need to talk about it, and we need to talk about the details of it, and we need to be more okay about it, because the more we don't, the more problems happen. And we're learning that more and more all the time. And as you don't give women the respect of being sexual human beings, we end up making decisions on our own that, you know, had I not been told about that, could have been problematic, right? Or had I been told the day of, after the procedure, that would have been very cruel. And I know that wouldn't be the intent, but to me, that would have been very cruel and upsetting. So just saying, think about that. If you're a medical professional, that is a part of our life. Let's talk about those things. Let's give people realistic expectations so, again, they can plan and think appropriately, prepare their partners appropriately, have those discussions. So thank you so much for listening and sharing this situation, story, whatever you want to call it, with me. I hope that there's something that you can take away from it, whatever that is for you. And hopefully it's helpful. That's the goal. That's why I want to share. And maybe it's somebody feeling that, okay, goodness, I'm glad somebody else understands me. I don't want to have a medical system that only plays to the lowest common denominator, that it's just that we have the result. One comment was made to me that, well, at least your pap smear, your second pap smear was normal. And it's like, yeah, that's a really positive way of looking at it, but it didn't feel that way to me at the time. It felt very sort of disrespectful of all the work that I had put into it. And it isn't just about the end result. It is about the journey, people. I don't want us to just have the, well, you didn't die be the end motto. This is the United States, and we're talking about how wonderful we are and how great we have it, and we do have it great in so very many ways. But that doesn't mean we should say, well, we've got freedom, so therefore, yeah, you get crappy medical care and we don't really have to care about you because you live in the USA. Let's make us great. Let's make that great. We have the ability to do that. We have the ability to do things differently and for people to still make money. There has to be money to be made in the system, A, so people will do the job, but B, because there are people in high levels who are making crap tons of money. So there's money there that is, it's happening. So it's not that we can only give the healthcare we give because, gosh, we're all just squeaking by. Like, we're all just squeaking by. Me, the nurse, to the CEO, we're just all just making it, man. So we're just doing the best we can. That is not what's going on here. And so how can we do this so that we have a healthcare system where people really do feel like their best interests are in line with what's happening, that the missions that we read on our clinics and our hospitals, that they are actually what we are getting, at least for the ones who really talk about paying attention to their patients and listening and all of that stuff. Because I think there are some hospitals, their missions are pretty clear that that's not necessarily their mission. And I appreciate them. If that's not your mission, don't put it in your mission statement. Don't blow me over with pretty words. Do what you say you're going to do and do it well. And there's a lot of workers out there who want to do it well, but are stuck in a system that they can't do it well. And so it's hard because I know I get down on the system and the doctors and the people in it. And I know there are very good people who really don't want to be in that system, who don't know how to get out or who don't know how to do different things or, you know, to do something differently. It takes a huge life shift. And bless the people who have. There are nurses who have said, I'm not doing this because of this, and they leave and they go take care of themselves. And the sad part of that sometimes is we need people on the inside changing the inside as well, because those of us on the outside, when we call and complain, we're just complainers, and they can slam the phone down on us, or we're just being annoying because we're asking them to do the thing that they probably know they should be doing, but they don't know how to do it. So how do we do this? I don't know. I don't quite know. Like I say, there are some nurses and doctors who have picked up and left and gone somewhere else where they can practice better the way that they see fit. How do we do this as patients? Utilizing the doctors that do the job we need them to do, which is a little tricky in my particular clinic because I love my doctor and she's still stuck within the time frames and some of those types of things. But I can't not use the nurses, although I guess in this particular situation, I kind of did. I kind of went, okay, well, I can't trust you guys. I'm sorry. I'm going to go off and do my own thing. And so I utilize other healthcare options because they're the ones that help me. What I wish is that insurance would be more helpful with some of that so that many more people could, you know, I could use more care than I have the funds to do. And it would be nice if I'm going to have insurance that the insurance would cover the things that actually keep me well so that I'm not using their, they owe me a big thank you, right? Because I'm not, you know, I saved them money by not having the LEAP procedure. I saved them money by not getting cervical cancer. Do I get a thank you note from them? No, I do not. So it's looking at those things. I would love to, for instance, I'm just going to call these guys out. I went to University of Minnesota Duluth, and they have a clinic on their campus, and I love the way they run their clinic. They run their clinic very patient-focused. Patients get the time that they need to talk to the doctor, to talk to the nurse. I don't know really what goes on behind the scenes, and I never had any major issues happening with them, but I will say that everything that I did have happen to them, even after I was a student, I called and asked them some questions and got assistance, really good assistance from them. And I've always appreciated the way they run their clinic and the philosophy that they run their clinic. And I would love students who go to UMD to be able to advocate for themselves in the future. And somehow, again, don't know how to do this because you can walk into your office and say, this is the kind of care I want. And they're going to look at you and laugh. But can we find those clinics that give the care like UMD does post-college experience and utilize them? And they're overutilized. Like, and I honestly don't even know where those clinics really are. I think we've got one in Essentia that's trying to run that way, a doctor in Essentia that's trying to run that way from what I hear. and really, really patient focused, so that you don't hear, well, I'm sorry, I don't have time to answer that question for you today. You're just going to have to make another appointment. And that was a pretty much direct quote from one of the people that is in one of my classes when she asked a fairly simple question. And that was the response she got because the doctor was just out of time. Now, that doesn't mean that we expect you to take hours and maybe answer every single question that we have. But her issue was not an issue that she's going to go back to the doctor for. So again, she's going to handle it a different way. Not a big deal and nothing massively dangerous. And again, there is a finite amount of time a doctor can spend with you on some level. But nonetheless, to have that kind of said to you and walk out the door feels kind of cruddy. I hope this all makes sense. And I hope my intent of sharing this comes through, because I'm not trying to, in a sense, just complain. I really am trying to paint a picture of where the challenges come in and ask the question of how do we as patients help fix this? Is there anything that we can do? Because I feel like I, in this particular situation, did all of the due diligences that I could to get the outcome that I needed and still didn't succeed. And I realize that a lot of people have a lot worse situations than this. I am totally wanting to acknowledge that. And their situations are absolutely real. But the reality is, if we're not talking about them on all different levels and we're not acknowledging the things that aren't going right, we can't fix them. And we can't figure out how do we fix them. I don't want just pretty words given to me. I want reality, and I want my healthcare practitioners to actually care about me. And I realize that in the system where a different nurse talks to you every single time, they can have your best interest in mind. But part of what makes our healthcare system work when it does work is that consistency of doctors over time, that consistency of healthcare professionals, the good healthcare professionals, and then working with other healthcare professionals, everybody working in concert synergistically together. And it really is synergistically. So when we can have that and not everybody in their own silo and in their own moment, and you're just another number they have to call and answer a question to, it changes everything. And it's not the only thing that needs to change, for sure, but it is a really important thing. So again, I'm hoping this helps. I hope you get it. I hope you hear where I'm coming from and understand why I'm talking about the things that I'm talking about. And I hope this helps in some way, whether it's somebody going, oh my God, I'm not the only one, and feeling maybe a little bit better about their situation. It doesn't solve the problem, but sometimes, you know, as much as misery loves company, the not feeling alone piece can be really, really helpful. So thank you very much again for listening. I really do appreciate it. And I am open to any suggestions or comments or whatever below the podcast or back through email or whatever the case is, to hear your thoughts. If you've changed anything or know of a way to make things work out a little bit better or have some influence in the system to make this better for everybody, that's ideal. There's so many things that could be just so much better, and people could be so much healthier because of it. And I want that to be our ultimate goal, is for us to be looking for the ultimate way for us all to be healthier and get the care that we need, whatever that looks like. So have a wonderful day. I look forward to having you join me next time. Thank you.